This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
We do this too, we're bringing that fire. Talking real talk, Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, we bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear. If you ain't listening, you ain't here.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Williamson. I've got a super special guest on today, Miss Carissa from Oklahoma Country Fried Glitz. Did I say that right?
Yes. And okay. Pretty much everyone usually messes that up. So I'm glad you said it right.
Got you. She is a female taxidermist in the state of Oklahoma, an African-American female taxidermist in Oklahoma. So we're going to have her on today to kind of pick her brain about what she does, you know, how she grew up, where she grew up, and how she got inspired to do taxidermy. So first off, tell us who Miss Carissa is.
I'm Carissa. I'm 26. I grew up in this tiny town of Dewey, Oklahoma. Pretty much grew up, a lot of people don't know this about me, but grew up on 15 acres, a lot of my family and everything. We did the dirt bikes, the ATVs, being outside, pretty much anything outside, building forts with random things and fishing and doing things with your grandpa. But I did sports a lot growing up. So it took me away from a lot of that life, which really sucks. But yeah, finally got out of sports and I started finally getting back to my roots and doing everything that I love and grew up knowing. So I do taxidermy part-time, hopefully full-time soon, and I've been a business owner for the past 6 years now, since 2020. But yeah, I mean, I've pretty much been growing on my own, running my business and doing social media and just growing the business. And the good thing about it is everything about my life is surrounded by things that I love, so it doesn't really feel like work as much as people would think, but it's a great like community that I've been able to find myself in.
That's awesome. So in the little town that you grew up in, were you raised in a hunting family, or did that come later?
No, it kind of came later. So my grandpa was, like, by the time we were old enough to start, you know, shooting and doing stuff like that, I mean, we shot at the house, but as far as taking us hunting, he kind of got too old at that point. So actually going hunting wasn't really in the cards for me, which kind of sucked. A lot of my friends did it. And of course, I had experience around like bows and guns and all the wildlife and stuff. But I just recently got into hunting, just a few years ago, thanks to my fiance, because he actually takes me and taught me everything, even though he knew it all already and kind of took me in and educated me on a lot of it.
Gotcha. So what was the first animal that you ended up harvesting?
Oh gosh. I really only deer hunt. I can't stand a bird, waterfowl, anything other than a deer. We have turkeys everywhere. We have duck dogs outside. They usually go goose and duck hunting, but I sit in the blind and I just take the camera and hang out with the guys. I don't even take a gun or anything like that, but my only desire is a deer to me. I don't like venison, but I do like parts of it, and I obviously love the hunt of everything. So to me, I actually get something out of deer hunting. I'm like, if I go waterfowl hunting, I'm like, you shoot it, collect it, and then what? I don't really eat duck or goose at all. So at least with deer, I feel like I'm getting something out of it that I put in, basically.
Well, I feel like you're the first person I think that I've ever met that has been duck hunting or goose hunting and don't like it.
No.
Usually, you know, when you go, it's like, oh, you're hooked. You know, that's how it was for me. Cause I mean, I've only been doing it for about 4 years now. And I had to go get my garage outside is full of decoys. I'm about to buy a boat. Like, I got all kind of stuff, like crazy.
Well, we have turkeys because I have chickens and all kinds of stuff. And we have turkeys that look like turkeys that you would hunt. Every time someone brings me like their deer or something, we have the turkeys just out and they all are like, oh my gosh, he looks just like a whatever wild turkey's called. And I'm like, yeah, he's not. He's domesticated, but he does look like that. But I don't know. I do love watching the dog. He loves his job and helping with the dog. But I don't know. I just don't understand the hype. I really don't.
Man, I love it. Because I was just like, when I first started, you know, I was a big rabbit hunter growing up because of my dad. And then I started deer hunting, and that was my thing. And then I got introduced to duck hunting, turkey hunting. So whatever season it is here in Kentucky, I'm out there. I don't care what it is.
Yeah, so I'm lucky. I really only have to worry about deer season.
Well, that's dope, though.
I guess I do. We go bow fishing, so that's like summertime. And I love bow fishing.
Yeah, bow fishing is a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I recently got into that. Like I said, he's done like all this stuff his whole life. But as soon as he took me, like, I kind of got hooked on that. So I understand, like, the first time you go and then you're hooked. But that didn't happen for duck hunting for me or goose hunting.
Well, like I said, you're probably the first person I've ever met that didn't get hooked, but it's understandable. It's not for everybody.
Yeah.
So at what point did you become interested in taxidermy?
Well, it's kind of a long road, I guess you would say. Like, once I got done with sports, I got back to my roots. And so once I started getting outside again and doing outdoor things instead of being surrounded by sports, I just got my own place and I kind of wanted to decorate it, you know, Western and country and all the things, but obviously still girly and like my vibe. So I started looking at, you know, decorations and things for the house, and I didn't really like anything. Like, everyone around here, everything's the same. It's just Euro mounts or just a standard shoulder mount. Like, nothing's ever like fun or different. And so I was just kind of like looking at stuff, and I was just like, I had my eyes opened a lot once I started looking at things, because a standard shoulder, like, it doesn't really like intrigue me at all. So once I started like getting into the artistry of it all, I did skull cleaning and stuff like that for longhorns and stuff for a few years. And then once I got into hunting, I was like, okay, if I can make skull mounts the way that I want and to look good and jazz them up a little bit, I feel like I could do that with deer mounts. So I just started looking at skulls and all different things and decided to go to school and see if that's something I could do. Because the way that I look at taxidermy, it's more of like an art type of thing instead of a dead animal just like on the wall. So it was just really eye opening to me on like the artistry of it all and what it could look like versus, you know, your basic taxidermy around here.
Yeah. I mean, because like you said, like every deer mount you see just about is shoulder mount, euro mount. You know, there's no anything in between. Now, you do see the occasional like backpack mounts and like bourbon barrel mounts and stuff like that. But yeah, they get a little bit more pricier. People don't want to pay for that stuff.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because like now that I'm in the industry, I know I like see the different prices and I'm just like, why the heck is that more or whatever, or the same price? And you would think it's not. But I mean, now that I am in it and see like what really goes into it, then now I'm like, okay, it makes a little bit more sense. So it kind of helped having like my fiance who hunts. I get to practice on his, because for a long time, I did not shoot a buck. Like I was out there hunting and I would only shoot does because I was like, my first deer, I don't want it to be a spike. Like, I get it. You kind of like have to build yourself up. But you have to keep in mind, when I started hunting, I'm 23 years old. I'm not just gonna, like, I have a little bit more self-discipline than to just go out and shoot a spike. So I passed a lot of good deer before I finally shot my first buck. And I still practiced by shooting does and stuff like that. But I enjoyed it. Like, so my fiance, he's like, most people don't pass like 120 inch deer for their first buck and stuff like that. And I'm just like,
not at all.
I mean, I'm not out here counting scores or anything like that. I just wanted a decent buck to like have under my belt as my first one. Cause I mean, you can't have your first again.
Right. Yeah. There was like a 10-year-old kid last year, like two counties over from me. He killed like a 185 as his first deer.
Wow. Yeah.
And like, he's never, like, he's going to pass
that again.
Yeah. I said, he's going to pass everything until he's 80 years old.
Yeah.
You know, some people just get that lucky, but not everybody's that lucky. But I'm definitely not, especially on my first one, I ain't passing 120. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone, they're like, you're crazy. You're never going to shoot a buck. And I was like, I mean, that's fine. Like, I still am enjoying the hunting, enjoying being out here. I still enjoy, like, taking a doe instead. I mean, like I said, that's why I prefer deer hunting, because, like, I'm getting out of it what I'm putting in. And it just, like, is so, I don't want to say satisfying, but, like, basically, like, satisfying. You get something out of it.
I get that. So how hard was it to learn taxidermy for you? Was it like very difficult, or did something that just came very natural to you?
To me, it's difficult because how much of like a perfectionist I am about things. Cause again, it is like an art. To me, I want it to look perfect and I want like the light to come back in it. I'm not just taking a deer and then throwing it on a mannequin and putting black around the eyes and calling it good. I do a lot of extra things to my mounts that your average taxidermist probably wouldn't do. Because when I went to school, he taught us kind of like the competition type side of things without like overwhelming us, but kind of showed us like, these are the extra things that you would do for like a competition and how to like really elevate yourself compared to other people. And I kind of just took that and ran with it. Because in my head, I was just like, well, I don't want to be bottom of the barrel. The items that I was making and selling before I got into taxidermy were kind of on the higher end. And so it was a little difficult to like prove that I was elevated a little bit and not just average, which also in turn is very difficult because I'm sitting here spending so many more hours on a mount compared to like your average taxidermist. And so it was hard. But I definitely, people reach out to me all the time about taxidermy and I encourage them, like, if you have that art side to you, to just try it and do it, because it is more of an art type of thing. just because you're a hunter doesn't mean you're going to be a good taxidermist. Like, I'll say that. But just referencing like the true art of the deer and having to recreate all of that was a little difficult. Just trying to be, I mean, you can't really like recreate life, you know, but you can try your hardest.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of hit the nail on the head right there. Just, well, coming from the sports side, you know, I'm a former athlete as well. Just because you were good at a certain sport, doesn't mean you can coach it.
No, yeah.
You know, so it kind of goes, I guess, the same in taxidermy. Just because you hunt don't mean you're going to be a good taxidermist. But
Yeah. I'm sitting here. So I like work at the shop at the house. And so I'll have my fiance come out with me sometimes, like when guys bring their deer and he's like, comes out, looks at the deer. He's bullshitting with them, talking about hunting and all this stuff. They stayed for probably 30, 45 minutes talking. And we come inside and he's like, I could do this taxidermy stuff like that. This is easy. And I'm like, all you did was talk to some hunters and they dropped off. I was like, that's not the job of taxidermy. But okay.
Yeah, that's funny. That's hilarious. I guess. So what's one thing, I guess, in your mind that like people, I guess, don't realize about taxidermy? Or like something that, you know, goes on behind the scenes with taxidermy that people don't see, you just don't realize it's being done.
There's so much that people don't realize because, I mean, you gotta love social media and they see these little clips of things that happen or like behind the scenes things that taxidermists do and it will blow up or it'll go crazy, like the video will just go crazy, and to us it's like it's so normal. But I mean, if you don't know, then you don't know. I mean, little things like the differences in eyes and ears and like where your deer comes from. Okay, this is probably like the best answer I could give you. Where your deer's harvested 100% matters. Like, I've had so many people come up to me and they're asking for remounts and stuff like that because they're from Florida or whatever and they don't know who to go to. And then they just take their deer they killed in Kansas to like an Oklahoma person, but they didn't tell them that. Well, I mean, I've been in taxidermy just for a year now. And just from that, if it comes from Kansas, I know its face is going to have to get extended because my Kansas deer, every time, for some reason, their faces are way longer than Oklahoma deer. Oklahoma deer, their ears are tiny. So it's like, it's just like small things about like where they come from. It makes such a huge difference. Even like how the thickness of the cape or their hair, like so many things just add up. And people don't take that in consideration. Like where we buy our forms from, there's so many companies and stuff of where you can get them and they're all built differently. And I could not mount a Florida deer on the company that I use. Like you just can't. They're not versatile like that. You would have to use a different company because their bodies just aren't built the same. You know, everything's different. And so a lot of hunters, I guess they don't realize that, which I mean, if I harvested something, I would just bring it back to my home taxidermist too and be like, hey, can you mount this or whatever? But it is something that you do have to take in consideration, like just wherever you get it from, probably tell your taxidermist or just take it to a taxidermist that's local to that area and like has an idea on the deer around there instead of just anybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, because every deer, you know, out of, you know, different states, they're different. Like Florida deer are a lot smaller than Kentucky deer, and Kansas deer are going to be different than Kentucky deer, and, you know, Oklahoma, like you said. So, yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense, actually. And people just drop it off and don't say anything and just like, where was this deer harvested, you know?
Because, like, I really only take two measurements of deer, which is like their swell and then their face. But if you don't like tell me that it is from somewhere else, I mean, their swell could be one thing, but then their shoulders could be absolutely tiny, or like around here, they're like really big and broad or whatever. And so like I could order a form based on just those two measurements and it's completely wrong. And your deer is not going to look the way that it did. I mean, obviously I, as a taxidermist, it's my job to realize, hey, this doesn't fit right. I need to do something differently, but it would save time and money if like we did know that ahead of time and then we could order like accordingly.
Yeah.
But I mean, you look at a deer, you look at the rack, it, I mean, you don't really like notice really as a hunter, like the differences until you get it back from the taxidermist or something and something's wrong. And they're like, wait, what's going on here? But it is something
I've had two of my deer, I'm talking about two complete botch jobs, and to the point where I went to pick it up, looked at the taxidermist, like we locked eyes and he's like, this one's on the house. I was like, it better be. I was like, can you fix this? He's like, man, I fixed it the best I can. He said, I messed it up. I apologize. This was when I was younger, you know.
Yeah.
Luckily we're a huge deer. But I was proud of them.
I mean, you obviously were proud of it enough to get it mounted and you wanted to like showcase it. And so it does suck because there are a lot of taxidermists everywhere that they just take your rack, your cape, put it on something and get it out the door. And I didn't want to be like that. And then not only being a woman in taxidermy, but also a woman in color. Like I already knew I was going to stand out in the industry. So, I mean, why not make it for a better reason than just that?
Yeah. For one, being a woman and a woman of color, like you've got the ball out. Like you can't afford to mess nothing up, you know?
No, I get people all the time, like I'll go and pick something up or I'll go and I'll meet them. And I get this comment all the time and they're like, oh, well, you don't look like a taxidermist or whatever. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, what does a taxidermist mean? Like, what do they look like? You know, like, I don't know. I never know how to respond to that. I'm just like, oh yeah, thanks. Yeah, like what?
That drives me nuts. People, you don't look like a hunter. Like, so what does a hunter look like? What do they look like?
I'm like, okay.
Because I have all my teeth. Is that?
Yeah. I don't know. I get it all the time, which is fine. I know there's not a lot of females in general that will deal with the things that, like, I've dealt with as far as, like, deadheads and stuff like that, because like I said, I did skull cleaning before I did taxidermy. So I mean, you're dealing with rotten meat and just the nastiest of things, and to me it's normal. Like growing up, like I said, we're on 20 acres whatever and we're out there killing things and just dissecting them for the hell of it or whatever. Like it was just normal, or like fish, or just skinning them and bullfrogs or whatever. So I never was like weirded out with it, and it was just normal to me. But to other people, they just like act so shocked, and I'm like, is it because I'm a girl, or is it because I'm a woman of color, or are you just like not okay with it? I don't know, but I'm not even gonna ask. But again, a lot of people around here know me from sports, so like seeing me in this lifestyle to them is very confusing, because I mean, a black girl is supposed to be good at sports, you know. A black girl's not supposed to be gutting deer, hunting, and doing taxidermy. So it's very out of the norm, and I understand that, but also like it shouldn't be like criticized like that.
Yeah, for sure. What sports did you play? You look like a softball player.
Oh, I did everything. Mainly I went to college for track, and then basketball, softball, volleyball, soccer back in the day. Everything. So
you did it all then.
Yeah. which that was my whole life. And I'm so glad. Like, it was honestly so relieving to just get rid of sports and, like, do things that I wanted to do and, like, just be outside and not have to be in that life anymore. Plus, I'm super blessed because of social media. Like, my very first TikTok blew up, which, again, this is, like, 2020 when TikTok was, like, really big. My first TikTok blew up, and after that, like, I've, like, sold out of everything. And so I'm very blessed that, like, this life that I'm able to live is because of social media, and I don't know anything else, like, having to deal with the horrors of, like, terrible bosses and all the things like that. So,
yeah, I get that. So when you first entered, I guess, you know, the taxidermy industry, did you ever feel like an outsider?
No, I would say I went to taxidermy school. Thankfully, the school, we were all girls. Like, I mean, it was our male teacher, and then luckily my class, it was all girls. So that felt very, like, normal. And then after school, I went to the Oklahoma Taxidermy Convention, where, like, everyone from Oklahoma competes and everything. I didn't compete. I just went. And it was so, like, everyone's so inviting. Like, this world is so crazy and how, like, helpful they are and how encouraging everybody is. I've never been in an atmosphere where, like, everyone is that way. Because, you know, there's people who are a little bit more advanced, and then they see the new people and they're, like, you know, got their nose up or whatever at you, and you can tell. I never felt like that. And then at the end of the day, I mean, I look around, I'm only the only person of color in the room, but, like, they never made me feel different or anything like that. And everyone was so, helpful and inviting, which is crazy. I mean, anything else that I've been in, that's, like, usually the first thing I notice. And I'm just like, crap, like, it's only me in here. Everyone's going to be staring at me or whatever. It never fails that someone makes a comment about being the only Black person in the room. But I've gone to the convention 2 years now. I've talked to a lot of people in the industry, and nobody has ever, like, made me feel unwelcomed. And it's amazing, honestly.
That's
the
great
way that it is.
That's great. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I go to the NWTF convention every year.
Okay.
Feel. And, first time I went, you know, I counted maybe two of us there the whole time. And last year I got the opportunity to work for, I was in the retail booth. So I'm an ambassador for Retail USA. So I got to work their booth, and, like, just the amount of people coming up to me and shaking my hand, you know, picking my brain about, you know, the shotguns and just talking to me like I'm a normal human being.
Yeah.
Not because I'm a person of color, but just coming up to me. He's like, "Hey man, you know, tell me about your shotguns."
Exactly.
I was like, man, this is a great feeling, instead of, you know, them coming up to me, kind of looking at me like you know about shotguns, you know?
Yeah,
I do. I know a lot about shotguns. I know a lot about guns, period. Like, you want me to, you know, but it feels good to go in a space and not feel like you're competing against everybody, if it makes sense.
Yeah. It's like you're basically only involved because of your color or whatever. Because sometimes it seems like that, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've been in some spaces like that, too.
Yeah. And so it was nerve-wracking, obviously, to step in the world, but it was so relieving to just be a taxidermist or be the newbie or whatever and not be the new Black girl or whatever, you know? Like, it's... Oklahoma has treated me well so far.
That's good. I'm glad for that. Now let me ask you this. Why do you think there's not more African Americans that want to go into taxidermy? Because I know there's a lot of us out there that hunt. Mm-hmm. But the taxidermy side is a little bit different. So why don't you, you know, why do you think there's more of us that, you know, don't want to go into taxidermy?
I don't know, honestly. I feel like it's not talked about a lot. Like, everyone talks about hunting, but I mean, no one talks about, you know, after the fact or anything like that. I mean, even like processing or anything like that. Like, anyone could be a butcher. Right. Anyone could do processing, but like, I don't ever see like new people getting into it. It's right. really like your like standard people that have been in it for years or whatever. In Oklahoma, like just going from the conventions, I've noticed so many like more females. So like last year there weren't very many. And then this year, I mean, it was mainly female taxidermists. So like just like the female industry or like the females coming into the industry has grown. So I'm hoping that it will become more of a thing for like people of color to actually do it. Because I would say when I first started like skull cleaning and stuff like that, I held myself back and I would like hide myself from the videos. Like I would like hide that I was a person of color making these things, because when you see a Western video blowing up, like anything in the Western industry, whether it's fashion, if art or whatever, I mean, it's just your standard poster country girl with straight hair, cowboy hat, you know, no one yeah. that looks like me blows right. up in the Western industry. So I was like, I'm going to hide myself so people don't know that I'm the one that's doing these things and make these items and sell them. And I was really holding myself back, which sucked, because as soon as I started actually showing like who is the person behind the camera, who is making these things, like it has helped me so much more showing that it's me doing these things, because people are more interested. They want to know. And then I have so many comments where people are like, a woman of color, like this is awesome, like I want to do that, like, and it just like is inspiring for them to see someone like them doing something like that. So it has helped a lot, like me doing social media and actually showing myself and not hiding myself anymore. And so I hope that at least me being out there and people seeing someone that looks like them or looks like me doing it, that it would help them feel more comfortable doing it, because it is nerve-wracking. I totally get it. I mean, clearly, I was out here hiding myself. So hopefully me being out here will help another girl or a person of color step out of the norm and kind of just do what makes them happy and create something.
Yeah, for sure. I was kind of like that in college, because I kind of had my group of guys. And they were, you know, all black guys. You know, mm-hmm. where I grew up, I was like the only black guy surrounded by, you know, a bunch of Caucasian boys, which was cool. Yeah. You know, it was my boys. But, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of found, you know, my clique when I was in college, and I kind of hid myself, kind of who I was for a long time. But like they told me, you can't hide that country twang that you got.
Yeah.
And like, we knew what you were doing. You know, when it got cold, you'd leave for the weekend and come back and you'd have deer jerky and all that kind of stuff handed to everybody. Like, we already knew, yeah. you know, but once, you know, they, you know, took me under their wing and, you know, the real me came out. I was like, man, you ain't got to hide yourself for us. Like, we your boys, yeah. and the people who don't, you know, want you to do that. It is what it is. You just keep going and do what you got to do. So,
yeah.
I get that. Sure. I mean, I did the same thing. So I completely understand where you're coming from.
And it sucks that like we have to feel like that, because I know like white people don't feel like that. They don't like go out and they're out here making something that's like, I don't know, or doing something that's more black, and they don't feel some type of way about doing it. It's just them doing it. And it's like, I can't feel like that because of how I've been treated in rooms like that, you know? And so it just sucks. And so hopefully like having more like black hunting groups and ambassadors and things like that, and just having more of like people that look like us in these communities and people sharing their lives in these communities will hopefully help others, because it does make a difference. I see the comments and everything of like the girls and guys that are of color, and it just like helps them decide to go and do it because someone else did it and is sharing it and having a good time. So hopefully more people will start to see it, and more people will start to share it, and more people will join.
Yeah, for sure. So what advice would you give, let's say there's a little 12-year-old little black girl out there that sees your videos, but she's kind of in a space where, you know, she's kind of scared to get out there and start doing the same thing that you want to do. Like, what advice would you give her?
I would tell her to just do it. I know that sounds like terrible. Like, you just have to do it. I mean, whether you get negative feedback or you get positive feedback, it's feedback. And you just have to take that and then turn it into something that will help you grow. Because, like I said, whether it's positive, that's going to help you grow. If it's negative, you know where you can learn and grow in that aspect of everything. I wish there was more people that encouraged me to just go out there and just do it. Don't stop yourself because of what you're worried of, what might happen or what might hold you back. You're not going to know what's going to hold you back or what's going to happen until you actually put yourself in that room, in that space. It's hard to mentally block yourself from what it could be. I mean, if I would have continued to hide myself from the phone or anything like that, I mean, who knows, I probably wouldn't have grown my business to be a full-time business. I wouldn't have been able to work for myself. I wouldn't have the followers that everybody cares about and stuff like that. I wouldn't have the community that I have without doing it. And for so long, it was just hiding myself and holding myself back, that if I see someone that is thinking about growing or just truly showing who they are, like, I'm out here just encouraging for you to do what you love and be yourself instead of worrying about everyone else. Because if you're in the social media world and you're sitting here, interactions are interactions. The amount of times people fight in my comments over things, like someone commented on one of my videos before and they're like, wow, you're stealing white culture. And I'm like, it didn't bother me because I'm like, I could care less about a comment, but everyone in the comments is sitting here fighting and everything. Like, you just can't let that stuff get to you, but it's interactions and it helped my video. So, and it could help my video get seen by somebody that, again, looks like me and inspires them to do it. And I see how that I just ignore it, brush it off my shoulder or whatever, but it's just wild. But yeah, I would help anybody be who they are and go out and just do their dream. I mean, you can't hold yourself back.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times, like, I think me and Trey actually had a podcast episode where we were talking about, you know, people in our comments just being negative and whatever. It's like, you can't let that stop you, you know.
It's so bad. And they'll say anything. Like, yeah, they'll say anything. And I seen a comment the other day and she was talking about, I'm sorry for all the hate that you're getting. Like, keep inspiring people doing what you're doing. And I didn't even know what she was talking about, all the hate that I was getting, because I don't even read comments really. Like, I mean, I'll see it and I just brush it off, because at the end of the day, that random person's comment on my video is not stopping my business. It's not changing my mind about anything. It doesn't affect me whatsoever. And it makes engagements and stuff on my posts. So I'm just like, have at it. Right. But I understand not everyone is able to just do that. But at the same time, like, you kind of have to have that mindset if you're going to be in social media.
You do. So. And when I first started my podcast, I did not have that mindset. And I would be reading these comments and they would just piss me off. And then I finally got to the point, I was talking to Trey one day and he's like, bro, you cannot let that get to you because it will drive you crazy.
It will.
And now I see him and I'm just like, yeah, it is, whatever. Here's another video for you. Boom.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's just going to make them more mad for them to see you doing better and doing good than it is for you to argue with them in the comments. It gets crazy. But yeah, my fiance, he reads stuff. And especially if it's about deer, it will drive him insane. I'm like, who cares? I say all the time, like, who cares? You just can't. You can't care. But it's just crazy the things that you have to deal with. Sometimes I get those comments in real life and I'm just like, I don't even acknowledge it, honestly.
Yeah, it's like half the stuff that these people are saying online, like when they see you out in public, they ain't gonna say it to you. You know, they ain't got the guts to say it to you, especially like you said, if you're with your fiance or with your significant other or whatever, like they ain't gonna come up to you and say that. Like,
no,
they're gonna hide behind a keyboard, you know.
Yeah, because my fiance is, he's white and Indian, mainly white, and so I already have to deal with that, like, you know, interracial things and like people saying something about us being an interracial relationship and stuff like that. So like I get hit from like all sides, like, oh, you're whitewashed, oh, you're with a white boy, oh, you're not country because XYZ or whatever. And it's just like, I'm so glad that your comment doesn't affect my life, because who cares? Like, just shut up at the end of the day.
Like, you love who you love, who cares what color they are, as long as they treat you good. And, you know what, like, I don't understand where that came from. Like, I know it started way back in the day, but like, who was the first person to say like white was superior to any other thing? Like, I just don't know where that mindset came from. Like,
It cracks me up all the time. I'm just like, to me, I'm like, you're uneducated. Like, if you're making these comments to me, then you're uneducated. And I'm just like, I'm not even going to give you the time of day.
Yeah, exactly. You just, you know, you ignoring them, I think, pisses them off even worse, because they want you to, you know, reply to it and get in an argument, but you just ignore it and keep on going and just keep posting videos. I think that just makes it even better. So,
exactly.
But you said you're part-time doing this, correct?
Yeah, so I am currently part-time until I can grow enough clients to be full-time. So I was doing skulls and custom longhorns, stuff like that before, and that was my full-time job. But now that I'm like leaning more to taxidermy, obviously I have to build my clientele up for that. Instead of like the skulls, it was just all online based and I was just shipping them out, whatever, posting them on my website. So now I'm like having to find more local people and grow my clientele. There are a lot of taxidermists in my area, so it's just one of those things. Obviously I knew I wasn't gonna off the bat be able to make enough money my first year. I got engaged in December last year, so now I have a wedding to pay for, and I'm sitting here like, okay, well, perfect time to start a new career, but whatever. So this season was my first season as a taxidermist, and so once I can get my clientele up enough to be full-time, then yeah, I'll be full-time. I just am kind of marketing until I get there.
Yeah, well, congratulations on the wedding.
Thanks. Yeah, everyone's expecting me to have longhorns there because, I mean, that's what they know me for the past 5 years. They're like, oh, I can't wait to see the skull that you're going to do. And I'm like, I'm not doing a single longhorn. Like, it is deer-based. We are going to literally have antlers on our tables and our cake is legit going to look like a deer. So it is definitely a lot different vibe than most people would expect, but everyone who knows me, they're like knows me personally instead of just from social media. They're like, I expect nothing more. Like that's you. So it'll be fun.
Well, congratulations. Hope it all goes well. And where did the name Countrified Glitz come from? Was that something that you're already thinking about it, or was it something that just kind of came to you, or how'd that name come about?
So I love things that have a significance. And so, like I said, I was not expecting my skulls to blow up like they did. When I first started doing longhorn skulls and stuff, it was for my house. So like, I just moved out, wanted something that was mine. I was like, I want something that's country, but also like bougie and blingy like me. I mean, how many hunters do you know out there? And then they have this like trophy wife that's like this city girl that doesn't hunt or whatever. So I was like, how can I like combine these two worlds and it still be like even, you know? And yeah. So I'm like writing down words that mean country or outdoors and stuff like that. But then I was like, bling and bougie and like stuff like that. So I was like writing words for both. And I was like, countrified. And then I was like, glitz, because at the time, all the skulls that I was doing were glass, blingy, glitzy skulls. And so it was just perfect for me to put those two together and it mean both things, basically both sides of the world into one. So that's how I just kind of came up with it, just random words. And I was like putting two worlds together to mean one thing. And the only thing I regret is the fact that nobody can say countrified for some reason. I don't know why, but I wish I would have chose something that was a little easier to pronounce. I don't know if it's the country accents or what the deal is behind that, but that's my only regret. Otherwise, I absolutely love my name and how I created it and what it means.
Yeah, it's got a ring to it, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, once you, you know, get your clientele built up, you know, I think you'll take off just because of that name and, you know, the work you do. I was actually looking at your website the other day and I was like, oh, she's dope. Like, she knows what she's doing. Yeah. So
it's definitely different. Like, it's not like your basic, like, dead something taxidermy or, you know, yeah. Like, everyone uses that. Once I moved, like, transferred to more taxidermy type things, I was like, my name still fits, like it's countrified, and I still want to not just create like your standard shoulder mounts, but I want to do fun things. Like, I already have some doe mounts like planned, of having does on my freaking wall that look like they're sitting here fighting with a buck or whatever, you know, like your annoying nagging wife next to like your man or whatever. And yeah. So, like, I'm, like, excited to start doing, like, fun things like that. Because, like I said, I hate just your standard, oh, semi-upright or full sneak shoulder mount. I'm like, no, I want, like, emotion in it. So, yeah, I'm super excited to start creating some fun stuff like that. And then it'll really, like, bring my name out and set me apart from everyone else. Because that's just what I seem to do all the time, I guess.
So in your mind, like, what separates an average taxidermist from a great taxidermist?
I think finish work really shows. You can really tell how much they care about what it looks like based on their finish work. Because, I mean, the basics of taxidermy, like getting it to look how it should look, like a deer, like not something with googly eyes on your wall, is like pretty basic. But once you get to your finish work, if they're just doing one color of paint around the eyes, like black eyes or whatever, or just a straight black nose or whatever, I mean, those are something even a hunter is going to notice, you know, like they're gonna notice if it just is off. And so when you're sitting here looking at mounts, it's kind of eye-opening. Like, I encourage any hunter to go to a taxidermy convention, usually the last day of the convention of every state. It's open to the public. It's free. I encourage every hunter to go, and they will see, like, what it can truly look like and why some taxidermists charge what they charge. Right. Because that's a huge controversial thing, how much people charge. And they're like, oh, I can get a $400 mount, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, great, go there. Like, that's totally fine with me. I don't want clients like that. I want the clients that care about what their mount looks like, care about their deer, and don't just shoot anything with four legs in the woods, you know? So it does really show how much they care about their art and in their finish work. Adding pink back into the eyes, putting texture on the nose. glossing their nose, because like some places don't, or like the ear, you know. And I feel like hunters only notice the differences when it's bad, which is so sad, because it's like they're like, oh, I hate this. Like, they get it back to the taxidermist and they're like, this looks like crap. And I'm like, yeah, if you looked at the other mounts that they've done, I mean, you should have known what was gonna happen,
right? But
yeah, absolutely. I mean, to each their own. If you're telling me you paid $400, like, what did you expect? I mean, it once you hear the price, you kind of can get an idea of the quality you're going to get. And, you know, it is what it is. I get it. Some people don't care. Like, they don't care if it has just black eyes and a black nose, and they put it on the wall and they never look at it up close again for the next 20 years or whatever. And that's totally fine. If that's your vibe, like, you're not my client. And right. That's totally fine. There's a taxidermist out there for everybody. So no,
sure,
the finish work definitely is a big deal.
I got you. Well, that's awesome. Well, I hope for sure, you know, your everything comes and goes good for you in the next 5 to 10 years, and you blow up, and I can actually say that I had you on my podcast when you do blow up. So don't forget about me.
Right.
But,
hopefully.
It'll happen. It'll definitely happen for sure. Like, you know, you've got the name. It seems like you've got the grind. You're just trying to get some more, you know, clientele. That, you know, that comes with time, you know.
Yeah.
People will see your work. People will see all your stuff, and social media helps out big time with that. So
100%. I mean, already all of my clients are, I would say 80% of my clients are from out of state, which is totally fine with me. Like, obviously I'd love to work with local people, but a lot of the locals like around me are those people that don't really care what their mount looks like. So all the extra work that I put into their mount, it's kind of like unappreciated. So it does suck, but I'm glad that social media has like given me this opportunity to actually be who I am and not just be stuck in the confines like of this tiny town and this mindset that's here. And I can actually show like my artistry and find people that appreciate it. Honestly, it's so eye-opening to just, I mean, obviously I'm here talking with you. I have another one set up tomorrow, and it's just like, it's working, you know, me showing myself in this industry is working. And if it can help one more girl out there or one more person of color or whatever, or anybody to just be themselves and not worry about what they look like and just do it is really the goal, honestly, is the only reason I post on social media.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think it'll be good. I think you'll be just fine. So how can people like find you on social media if they want to check out, you know, some of your work?
All of my social media is at Countrified Blitz. I'm so blessed that nobody else has that name, that I'm able to use that username everywhere without all the weird underscores and periods and all the things. But yeah, it's just at Countrified Glitz. And even my website, I think it's Countrified Glitz LLC. But my website has past work, current work, skulls, and all kinds of things that I do outside of taxidermy. And I just created a new logo. I'm super pumped about my logo because I drew it myself. That was very out of my comfort zone, but I'm obsessed with it. And again, it's like bringing two worlds together in one. So maybe I'll do like some merch or something, because it is a very, it's a nice logo. I'll just say that. Anybody can wear it. They can wear it hunting. They can wear it out on a hoodie, whatever. So maybe I'll have merch or something. But yeah, everything's at Countrified Glitz. And I started YouTube. It should be the same username. If it's not, it's LinkedIn, my socials. So hopefully YouTube can become a thing for me one day.
Hey, them YouTube shorts, man. I'm telling you, that's where it's at. If you can just.
Yeah, they've been going crazy. I've just been posting my TikToks on there, and yeah, like they've been blowing up on YouTube too. And I was like, I did not realize people watch YouTube shorts like that. I mean, I've never got on there and just was like scrolling through it. But
yeah, they do.
They do good.
Some people do TikTok. Some people like Instagram. Like, I love Instagram. Yeah. That's where most of my stuff is. I got some stuff on TikTok, but they always flag me every time I post something. So
I know. I was like going to your TikTok. I was like, wait, can I say like gun or like, can I say these things? Because I was like, I know what the podcast is about, but I was like, what's like acceptable to post? So I was watching and I was like, oh, okay. Some people said it. So I was like, hopefully it'll be fine. But
yeah, it'll be fine.
You can't do too much. I mean, even the taxidermy stuff gets flagged. And I'm not even showing blood or anything like that. And it's just like, come on. I mean, what do you expect from us? How are we supposed to grow if we can't show like our work?
Well, but TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all of them, like they're all anti-hunting anyway. So it's like, you know, you gotta take your losses when, you know, take your losses. So,
Facebook. It's like Facebook's trying to stay relevant. They are paying like the best right now. And they're the only ones really that you can post things on without like going crazy.
Yeah.
I've been trying to do more on Facebook lately. Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. That's all I've got so far.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast tonight. Hopefully, you know, Trey, you have the same type of podcast with Trey tomorrow night or whenever you have it with him, because he's a good one too. That's like my little brother. So
sweet.
So any final thoughts for the listeners? Anything you want to say to anybody out there that, you know, want to get started or feel like they don't belong in a certain space?
I would just say, let me think. I would say put yourself in those uncomfortable positions, because if I didn't do that, I'd be holding myself back and I wouldn't be out here inspiring others to be themselves. So put yourself in the uncomfortable positions, because whether it's good or bad, they're going to talk about you, and you know, you can use that to your advantage and make yourself stand out. I mean, however you have to do it, whether it's good or bad. I mean, you can sit here and you can feel sorry for yourself because you are the only person of color or whatever. You can not go because you don't want to be the only person of color there or whatever. And then it's like, what is that going to do for you? At the end of the day, it's not going to help you. It's not going to put yourself out there in these spaces to help you grow or create a business or whatever it is that you aspire to do. Put yourself in those uncomfortable positions. You'll get feedback. You'll inspire somebody, and you might find somebody else that also did that same thing. And then you guys can grow a community yourself. You never know what it can turn into. So definitely do that and see where it takes you.
Sounds good. Well, Countrified Glitz, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you go check her out. She's in Oklahoma. Like her videos, follow her, you know, make sure you give her due diligence, that she's trying to get out there. She's trying to blow up. I think she will. So
trying my best.
Yeah. But, if there's anything I can ever do for you, you got my contact information. Any questions or whatever, you know, I'm an open book. I'm always eager to help the next person, you know, keep rising, you know?
And, yeah.
Even if you got to come to me and talk about, hey, I feel like quitting, come to me. I ain't gonna let you quit.
Help me. Yeah.
I will help
if you like ever want to come back to Oklahoma and go hunting, you know, let us know. We are open. We are not a guide service. We'll try our best, but you know, it'll still be a good time.
That's fine. Yeah, but I'm telling you now, if I come to Oklahoma, I'm going to want to go duck hunting. So,
hey, we have dogs. Our dogs are great. We can go. Okay. We have places to go. We just never go. We're just like, it's fine. We'll stay at home.
Yeah, that's fine. That's good with me. But appreciate you coming on the podcast. This podcast will be out on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, everywhere you get your podcasts. So make sure you give it a like, subscribe. I'll be sending clips out on Instagram like I normally do in the next couple weeks. So you guys stay tuned to that. But if nothing else, big game, small game, all game. We do this too.
We do this too.